Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being on the call. I'm sorry, I was I couldn't unmute myself. I was having technical difficulties. Boy, that's why we don't recommend a lot of tech stocks. Anyway, still a lot of people coming on. It looks like we're going to go over 1,000 callers. I did not expect that, unfortunately. I'll be able to start here in a second. I say unfortunately because I'm supposed to notify them if I think we're going to have over 1,000 calls, which we haven't had in a while since I've been recording the calls, but it looks like we are today. I don't know if they're going to let everybody over 1,000 come in. I'm not sure. I'm going to assume they're not. I'll find out in a little bit, I guess. Anyway, so a lot of people still joining the call. I appreciate so many of you getting the last minute notice and responding to it. And I think it's an important conference call. There's two reasons why I wanted to have this today. So last night, just give you a snapshot of what I do every morning. So I start about 2:30 in the morning, and I start internationally. I go to Asia first, and I go over to the Asia markets. I read the Wall Street Journal Asia edition. I go through that. I go through some radio networks in Singapore that are financially based, and I listen to that, and I have that on. And I go through a couple other local, not local to a particular city, but Asia papers, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, and two others. And I go through these, and I watch them. I won't mention two others because they're very liberal. I always try to look at both sides of it, so I always watch, as painful as it is sometimes. I always listen to that side as well. Then I go to Europe later in the morning, and I do fairly the same thing, only I do more audio in Europe with some of the networks coming out of London. And then I move to the U.S. markets. And it's overkill. It's overkill for what I do on a daily basis. I don't use that necessarily as a preparedness for the program. I use that, number one, I'm always afraid someone's going to ask a very good question that I won't know anything about. I'm a little paranoid about that. The other thing is I still manage some institutional money, a fair amount of institutional money, and I always want to be as sharp as I possibly can. My degree in economics is international markets, and that's what my master's degree is. I did my master's thesis on the economics of Mussolini. You've heard me talk about that several times. So I believe that it's very important that I can't do it like I would like to, but it's almost important that I have my ear to the international streets as much as I do here on having my ear to Wall Street and Main Street here in America. So it's very important that I do that. Maybe it really isn't. Maybe it just is for me. But whatever the case, I find it very important for me, because everything that I talk about and everything I do from an economics perspective, and as I talk about the economy, it's always from a viewpoint of global economics. Even though I might not say that, it's always from a viewpoint of what's going on globally. See, I can't really analyze properly a particular multinational company, John Deere or Caterpillar is a good one. And I got to have a good feel for what is going on over there in order for me to do that. I used to believe that that was a good indicator of what might be coming. That has been proven wrong over the last 12 years. So I don't really follow that much, but I have to look at it. So I tell you all that to say this. So I'm going through, I started last night or early this morning, I go through and I've been seeing Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal Europe, Wall Street Journal Asia, a couple other financial networks and I'm hearing the same people being quoted. Morgan Stanley, BlackRock, John Hussman, or I don't know if you know who that is. He's an economist. He runs a Hussman investment trust. He successfully picked the downturn in the year 2000 and in 2007 and 2008. So he's now all of a sudden, because he made those accurate predictions, that, you know, he's a guru and knows what's going on. I'm hearing all these things. Everything is extremely negative. I'm hearing things like we're going to see a plunge of 50% in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Everything from that to Morgan Stanley saying that it's going to be the biggest market sell-off in months, and we're about to see it at any moment. And on it goes. It's a lot worse if you get into the really liberal media. It's, of course, a lot worse. As a matter of fact, they don't talk about downturns. If they talk about severe downturns, then they've got to admit there's been a very good uptick, and they don't want to talk about that. So it's a little bit harder for them. They just talk about doomsday kinds of scenarios. So what I wanted to talk about was a little bit about what I put on my website this morning on the commentary section. So I got emails this morning very early. It's amazing how many people look so early at my commentary section of my website. And I got emails from people saying, this is, I'm looking for one when I speak, so I apologize, but I'm trying to think of the adjective that he used there. I can't find it. Then I got one that said, this is extremely alarming to me and my wife. I've got others that said, what do we do now? I'm scared, you know. And obviously, it's my inability, which I possess, to be able to write in the same tone of voice in which I might say something. And sometimes when I write, it sounds just horrifying and scary. So I immediately decided, all right, I'm going to do a conference call. I think I added that to my website as well. And, you know, I'm going to try to articulate what's going on and what I'm thinking and what I feel. So the very first thing I wanted to do, I don't agree with 85% of all those things that I just talked about, because of the premise in which they're coming from, and I've talked about this several times. You've got to remember that all of these analysts are coming from the premise of two things, two places. One is the vast majority of them hate Donald Trump with every fiber of their being. That's one. Doesn't matter how well their business is doing today because of him. That's irrelevant. Their ideology has long since, this has been 10 years since they've not allowed their ideology to blind them into common sense or to, and I know some very practical people that have fallen prey to that. So it comes from that standpoint, and it also comes from the standpoint, remember, they hate Donald Trump, so they must love fill in the blank. And if that is the case, then they're coming from a standpoint where we have just come off of the longest cycle of growth than we should have without a correction. Now, I know, and this person might even be on the call, and certainly if they're not on the call, somebody from Timothy may be on the call. But I'll just say at a Timothy meeting not long ago in Houston, I was speaking for a few moments. I talked about what I believe is going on in the economy. And there was one particular fund manager shaking his head, and he was trying to get to me, you know, the rest of the evening because he vehemently disagreed with me, which is fine. That's okay. I disagreed with his premises. He disagrees with mine. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I believe he's wrong and I'm right. Of course I do. He believes I'm wrong and he's right. Of course he does. So, but he's coming from the exact same place as everybody else. And I said this at the meeting, that if you believe that this is the longest growth spurt This was after I said what I said, and everybody was shaking their head. And if you believe that this is a growth spurt due for a major correction because we have had this incredible 9 years of growth in the economy, then you believe, then if you believe that, then you believe that 2% GDP growth is perfectly normal. And as a matter of fact, you also believe that 2% GDP growth is exceptional growth and is all the growth that America needs. As a matter of fact, you believe that 2% GDP growth is growth that's going to take us into the future and prosperity for future generations. You have to believe that. Of course, everybody's shaking their head. Well, no, we don't. I don't believe that. Well, of course you do. But you just said we came out of the longest growth cycle that we've seen. Growth means growth in the GDP. We don't have growth in the GDP. We haven't had any growth in the GDP from my perspective. You can say, well, 2% is growth. I don't believe 2% is growth. But you might say that. You can't have it both ways. Either 2% is great growth, and we are at the end of an expansion of the U.S. economy to the likes of which we've never seen, meaning that 2% GDP growth on the average through these years is absolutely peak. That's what you believe. Well, no, we don't say that. It's more than GDP. You've got to look at the markets. Okay, that's and the setup for me was that they would say that. Well, of course, okay, good. You believe in the markets. So then you believe that the markets have grown because of government intervention. No, we don't believe that. Okay. If they didn't grow from government infiltrating the numbers, from government interference or government false positives, how did it grow? Because you admit now that 2% is an optimum growth for the United States of America. So if it's not optimum growth, how do we get optimum growth in stocks? How's that happen? Unless it's false positives from the government or central banks around the world. Well, it's a combination. A combination of what? It's either one or the other. It can't be a combination. Markets are supposed to grow because the economy is growing. The economy is growing, then the market grows. That's how it's been working for the last 120 years. That's how it works. No, it doesn't. Okay, but they could never really explain what they mean by this growth spurt for the last 10 years, and we are in the seventh or eighth inning of a growth cycle. Now, I'm not saying the market's not going to crash. What I'm saying, if it does, it isn't going to be because of the last 9 years of extraordinary growth. We have had no growth in the economy. Now, I won't bore you with all the things that I went on about what we've had over the last 10 years that proves my theory. But the fact of the matter is, it's literally impossible for us to be at the end of an all-time high of consistently extended growth of the economy. It's impossible. That never happens without wage growth. That never happens without inflation. That never happens when a labor participation rate is going to 40-year lows. That's never happened in the history of the nation. Never happened. Labor participation always goes up. Opportunity goes up. Wages go up. Inflations go up. Prosperity goes up. Poverty rate goes down. Poverty rates go down. Always. Always. When that happens, not poverty rate went up 8 straight years, 7.5 years, every single month the last president was in office. That never happens in a growth cycle. It's almost impossible. More food stamps, more welfare, more people on disability, never happens in a growth cycle. Why is that growth cycle different than any growth cycle we've ever had in the history of the nation? It's because we never really had a growth cycle. All we had, and everybody's drinking the Fed Kool-Aid, all we have had is a growth. All we've had is a growth in the markets, and the growth in the markets have come from false positives. So Federal Reserve keeps rates at 2%. If you are in a situation where you need income in order to survive, you got to get income from your various different CDs. You can't do it anymore. There was a day. Do you remember 8-10 years ago when you could get 5.25%, 4.25% on your CDs? Those days are gone. So what Alan Greenspan's plan was, in my opinion, to get all the wealth of the company, the country, which is all held by baby boomers, but the older generation. I've heard estimates from $8 trillion to $13 trillion of wealth. It's all in our 401ks, our IRAs, and all those things. And to force that those folks to get into the market because they have no choice, because they've got to earn some money, and the only way they can earn it is to get into the markets, and to force an enormous amount of money into the markets, number one. Number two, you've got central banks around the world putting money in our stock market because they can't earn any money in their own economy. How pathetic is that? They're buying our treasuries, they're buying our stocks, and you've got investors around the globe flocking, not just moseying over to the United States, flocking to the U.S. stock market. You have all that going on because of what central banks have done around the globe. Markets go up, stocks go up, keeps going up. But there's nothing happening in the economy. People are still starving. Nobody has gotten a pay raise in 13 years prior to the last 18 months. Nobody's gotten a pay raise in 13 years. We haven't had 3% GDP in 14 years. And all of these and poverty rates at our all-time highs, part-time unemployment all-time high. We have a labor participation rate at a 40-year low. And on it goes. So you can see I get very excited about these things. So here we are in the seventh inning of a growth cycle. What growth cycle? I wouldn't even say unequivocally that this is a growth cycle this year, 2018. It looks like it is. It certainly was in the first quarter. It certainly was in the second quarter. But a 4%, 4.2% GDP growth, that's wonderful. That's good. We've had that before. It's one quarter. The only thing that matters is where we end up at the end of the year. I don't think we're going to end up. I said back in January, if we have a 3.8% GDP growth rate, it would be phenomenal off the charts. But I'd be very happy with a 3%. And I think we're going to end up with 3+, which is very, very good. I'm going to say then we've had a really solid growth. But the thing of it is about this growth cycle that we have is everything else is going along with it. We've got higher wages. We're seeing some inflation come in, healthy kind of inflation, hopefully doesn't get out of control. So we're seeing inflation. We've got higher wage growth. Wages constantly going up another 0.4% or 1% today. So that's been going up on a very regular basis, in which we haven't seen in 15 years. So we have wage growth happening. We've got opportunity for jobs at an all-time high. We've got more job openings than we have plans. So that's the other thing. We've got so many people that desperately are looking to get a job, but we don't have enough openings. You know how long? I don't even know how long we have gone. I should know. And I'm trying to think, but I'm just going to guess. Well, it's been a long time. It's been a lot of years since we've had anything like that. We've got a lot of things backing this up. A lot of things backing this up. So all of what I just said is very positive, right? So I believe I got to tell you, I hate saying this. It is, for me, my worst nightmare that I've got to talk about economics, markets, movement in the markets in the same sentence that I'm talking about politics. I hate it. But it is where we live today, and it is a fact of the matter. We've got an all-out war on media. Not that it hasn't been bad, but it's twice as bad, three times as bad, on Donald Trump. They hate this man with a passion. The American people are not, but American media is trying to make that change. Here's the problem. Global media is doing the same thing. The global economy is getting more pathetic every day, as I said it would some time ago, not because I'm smart, because it was so obvious. And everything is Donald Trump. If you look at a German newspaper, if you look at even some of the Euro editions over the weeks of the Wall Street Journal, if you listen to BBC, financial news, London Financial News Network, if you listen to these, if you listen to Asia, Donald Trump's the reason for everything, every woe that they have. Every woe that they have is Donald Trump. And there's this war against the administration. If November elections don't go in favor of Republicans for the House of Representatives, all these J.P. Morgans and other economists that despise Donald Trump are going to go into panic, because they despise him, but they want him to continue to succeed from a business perspective. They just can't say that. And if we don't get if the Republicans don't get the House of Representatives, we're in big trouble, because the agenda is going to go out the door. Why? Because President Trump's not going to be able to get anything done. And everything that he does do, and business people are smart enough to understand this, anything that he does do by executive order is going to be changed the minute a Democrat walks into the White House. So they're going to look at everything he does as transitory. They're going to look at it as a temporary fix or a temporary issue. They're not going to look at it as a permanent thing, because he's not going to get anything through the House of Representatives. Nothing. So we're going to have a do nothing until 2020, when we have a re-election. So these midterm elections are very critical. I'm concerned about that. One of the main things I'm concerned about, why I did the commentary page the way I did this morning, was because so many people said they were afraid of what was going to happen. They were afraid that what was going to happen, you know, they're hearing all the doom and gloom. Then at the very next breath, they're saying, but I'm really excited. I'm doing great. I'm up 15%. I'm up 20%. I'm up 30%, whatever it is. And I know how much you want, but I only have 7% in cash. I don't know whether to keep buying. Should I keep buying? So now I start to panic when I see the email saying, you know, should I sell this to try to generate some cash so that I can buy something else? I start to panic. Look, I don't care how enthusiastic I sound, how much sense I make. You don't think I make any sense, but if you think what I'm saying is logical and you understand it, and you can maybe come to the realization that from a technical perspective, we're probably in the second or third inning, not the eighth or ninth, in a growth economy, in real growth, and it's only going to get better as long as we maintain a certain political path. It's only going to get better. And no matter how much you believe that, you cannot compromise your cash position. Now, if you don't do anything that I say, if you are over 50, 55, you cannot compromise your cash position. If you are younger than that, that's fine. But again, if I were younger, I would not only not compromise my cash position, I would want to add to it, thinking that if we do have the dramatic downturn, I'm going to buy back in with that cash to the positions I already own that got clobbered, which is going to be very, very good for me as a young person. But I have told young people, no problem. Do what you want to do. You can buy, you can find, you got long, you know, you've got a long time term time horizon. But I got an email from somebody 67 years old, been retired for years, and they have a cash position of 3%. Because the markets are so good and they've done so well, they believe they need to be almost all in. And I'll tell you, it gives me, it breaks my heart to hear that, because someday in the maybe not too distant future, they're going to be very sorry they did that. Look, people say to me, well, you know, you say I should buy this as part of my asset allocation model. I should have 5% in Timothy's Israel fund. Well, I don't want to do that. Okay, well, listen, nothing I say is what you have to do. Or you say I should have this much cash. I think that's too much. That's fine. You say I want to sell the profit. I don't want to sell the profit. That's fine. You do what you want to do. All I'm saying, though, is the plan is good. You know, I hate to, I'm not saying it's good because I made it good. It's good by the grace of God only, and it's good because it's worked for 32 years. And I can't find any reason why it wouldn't be working now. And the people that call into the show every single day, every hour, and say how wonderful they're doing, I don't know this, but I can guarantee you that 98% of them are people that follow my plan to the T and they don't waver from it. I can almost guarantee it. And you cannot, we are in, have we? I don't care how good everything is. We have to come to the realization that we are in a place that is very volatile. Have we figured out, not the market, not the volatility in the stocks, not that. We are in a political volatility that we're one tweet away from seeing a market crash. I'm not criticizing President Trump. If he didn't have Twitter, nobody would ever know what he's thinking or doing, because the mainstream media would never report it. But at the same time, that's a double-edged sword. We are one, I don't know, ridiculous, made-up lie of a media story that could send the markets into a tailspin. And let me tell you, if Democrats don't get a tailspin in the market before November, they don't have any shot. They know that. They are working around the clock in a frenzy to try to stop this agenda. I've said it before and I'll say it again. All through Scripture, God has used the unrighteous for his righteous purposes. I don't know what his plans are for President Trump, but I got to believe, based on everything I see, God's hand right now is upon this agenda and this economy. Hopefully, we won't need to learn any lessons this week or this summer. But we've got to be prepared. Here's the problem with being prepared. I've got a cash position of 15%. And my portfolio is making 25%. I'm being foolish by having this 15%. It should be invested. That's the downside. Or the upside is, well, at least I have 15% cash that I can use or live off of, if you're using this money, why I leave everything sit until it comes back up. That's the other scenario. Or, I guess, three, I'm a young person and I have this cash I'm sitting on and the market crashes and I can put it all in, put it all into the market dirt cheap because I still have 30 years before I retire. Look, I wanted to do this to beg all of you to pay attention to the commentary section of my website. Listen to it. Be aware of it. Don't get overweighted. Pay super attention to my diversification. Do everything that I say. Look, I have nothing to gain. You know that by now. I was going to go on that, but I won't, because I don't have to prove that to anybody yet here, unless there's a new listener, new partner. But do everything I say. Stick to the list. Don't buy anything today, because I wanted to talk to everybody before I take that away. I'll take it away tomorrow. But I wanted to talk to everybody today. I want you. I know this is counterintuitive. And I told you back in January. No, it wasn't January. Yes, it was. It was the end of January, because it was right before the first crash. When I told everybody we're going to start taking profits, or maybe it was even last year, I don't remember. And I told everybody we're going to start taking profits. And I want you to take profits. Uh-oh. Something happened. Oh. Somebody press *6, unmute themselves, and tell me you can still hear me.
Still there.
Okay, got
still
you.
Here.
Thank you so much. Okay. Okay.
You're good.
Thank you. All right. I'm not showing up anymore. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. One of the things that we need to be cautiously optimistic at this point because of the geopolitical events, because of the political events going on right here. This market, I'm saying this as a matter of fact. This is not my opinion. This market is not overvalued. Do you remember, I hope some of you do, I'm sure you do, do you remember a conference call that I had some time ago when I said that you have got to begin taking profits? I said, you're going to take profits, anything over 9%. And I said to you, that's not my normal strategy. I'm not suggesting you do that, except for some of those cornerstone foundational stocks, you know what they are, that you just keep in your portfolio, but start taking your profit and build up that cash position. I'm not saying you can't invest some of that cash, but you need to start taking some profits. And I indicated to you that you've got to start doing that. Right after that, we had that big crash in February. And, I looked smart. I didn't know that was coming, obviously. But so many of you have been taking profits. And I said this was a temporary strategy, but I think we've got to go through this year, or I said at least until after the November elections, with that kind of strategy. Don't worry if you're 20% in cash, more than what is indicated or whatever it is. Don't worry about it. You'll have plenty of time after November to get it invested. But you're not going to have plenty of time, if things go wrong, to get that profit again or to create that cash again without taking losses. I want you, if things turn bad, to be okay and to be able to don't sell out of anything. To be in a place where you're not selling out of your mutual funds with Timmy, not selling out of any of your stocks. I want you to be in a place where you feel good, you've got a good cushion of a cash position, and you're fine, and you're going to be able to weather what might be just a temporary storm. I hope I will have a feeling as to whether the storm is a little bit more than temporary. So I need all of you, for the sake of your well-being — it's got nothing to do with me or financial issues — but for your well-being, I need you all to be cautiously optimistic. And if you're one of those people, some of those people that have been compromising your cash position by getting all in, stop doing it. I would rather you err on the caution side than err on the very aggressive side. If you, again, as I said in my commentary section, if you're under 50 or 55, whatever I said, it doesn't matter, but somewhere in that neighborhood, you're fine. You can afford to compromise it because you've got a lot of time to wait it out, unless you're just risk adverse and you don't want to watch your account go down. But I need you to have that cushion, because if you don't have the cushion, I'm telling you what you're going to do. You're going to sell. You're going to start selling out of your Timothy funds. You're going to sell out of your bonds. You're going to sell your preferreds. You're going to sell, and you shouldn't be selling. And you're going to end up hurting yourself in the long run. So all I wanted to do today is to reiterate with as much conviction as I possibly can that you guys have to pay attention. It's why how many of you have told me that tracker system is so great, because it allows you to see. You now know what you have. You now know what you have in all of that. You could say, well, I'm over this percent or that percent. That's why you do that. And you got to stay, sound. So continue. Take some profit. I know it's hard to resist when you've got a stock like AMD that you're looking, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm up 60%. It's hard. Surely if I'm up 60, it's going to go up another 60, right? And that's one of those stocks that was a 52-week high just not that long ago. And so many of you have said, man, what a great stock in your portfolio. I sold mine. I had a big position in my IRA. I sold it. I sold it 2 weeks ago. I don't care if it goes 100%. I made like 42. I'm happy as can be. I don't care. So you've got to — don't worry about what it might do, or I'm going to continue to go up, or you're going to be sorry you sold. That's okay. You're going to be sorry a lot of times that you sold things. I'll tell you, you're going to be sorry that you didn't sell some things too. So don't, I get the phone calls and the emails. I get inundated with thousands of them. I'm up 12%. Should I sell my profit? Well, I promise you, when I change my strategy back to where it was before January, you will be the first to know. I promise. But until then, so like somebody said to me today, maybe on this call, well, and they may be new to all this, so I don't fault anybody, but you have it on your buy list, but it's at a 52-week high. Is it okay to buy? Yes, it would. Trust me, it wouldn't be on my buy list if I didn't think people were going to put money in it and add it to their portfolio. Remember, I'm talking about 8 to 10 years here. Somebody called me last week. I forget which fund it was. I don't remember. But they said they had a Timothy Mutual Fund. I don't know if you remember the call, but they said they had a Timothy Mutual Fund, and it was down, considerably from where they bought it. And they said, do you think I ought to sell it? And I said, no, what you need to do is put some more money into it. What are you thinking about selling it for? You've had it for 8 months or 9 months, whatever it was. 9 months, I think. You had it for 9 months. Why would you sell it? You bought it for 8 to 10 years, unless you weren't following my model to a T and bought it even though you knew it was only going to be for a year. But if you're following, which I always assume everybody's following, then you bought it for 8 to 10 years. You're worried about it being down. You should be buying more of it while you have a chance to buy it cheap. It's on sale today. You ought to buy it. That's the kind of attitude we have to have. So I'm afraid, and I know all of you aren't reading all the headlines and all these stuff that I'm reading all morning long. I get that because I'm reading obscure stuff that is designed for analysts. But when you see these, the headline of their article, it's like, oh man, here we go, sky's falling. And I have to, with every fiber of my being, hang on to the fundamental principles that I believe in so that I don't even get swayed. So I'm sure that you all, not knowing all the analytics and all the detail of the technicals, can fall into that very quickly. And it scares me that that is the case. So please be careful. Yes, be cautious. Don't compromise your cash position. Don't get overweighted. I love industrials, but I'm underweighted right now in industrials. You know, I have certain stocks that I love that I haven't bought in years that I don't own. I'm not emotionally attached to any of it. So try to stick. Don't say, yeah, but I worked all my life in the oil fields. I know how good this has been. I've watched people, you know, so I'm 22% of my portfolio is in oil. I mean, maybe that'll be a really good thing for you. Who knows? But it's not the right thing to do. You know, I'm not telling you not to do it. You do what you feel right. A lot of times you are closer to a situation and can make a better decision than I can. I just want you, if you're new at this, all the more important it is to stick with the plan and stick with the strategy. I said in January, listen, if you're up 9%, sell off enough shares, get your 9% out. If it goes up again, sell a little bit. If it goes up again, don't sell it. Keep it. Hang in there. You don't want to lose your position totally, but you want to take some profits when you have it. And capture that, let it go into your cash position. All of a sudden, you got a cash position that's very large. Somebody told me they had a cash position that was 33%, and back in December, they had practically nothing in cash. It was all invested. And all that cash they have is all money they never put in. It's all profit. It's all money they never put in. Now, the psychological impact of all this, folks, if you follow the plan and you're doing that, is you will begin to understand what most normal, everyday mom and pop, as they call them on Wall Street, investors go through. You will be in a place where you will actually know firsthand what it means for your money to work for you. You will know that. And you're going to feel so good that you are going to be the person that is going to sit here 5 years from now and say, thank God I didn't sell out. I just hung in there. I didn't sell out. I was fine. I was making some money. I captured some of it. I had some cash, and I believe in that stock. It was a great company, and yeah, I wrote it down, and you know, it's now it's coming back up. I'm glad I kept it. You know, you're going to start to get some of that and stay in that. The biggest mistake are mutual fund people that only do mutual funds. And I hope if you're in Timothy and you're doing some mutual funds, that's great. But it's never a good thing to stop. The best thing you can do with mutual funds is constantly contribute, even if it's $10 every once in a while, constantly contribute and keep it. Keep it for the long haul. Don't sell the profit out of mutual funds. Don't sell any profit out of your income producing stocks like your preferreds, your utility stocks, those kinds of things. Keep those. Don't sell the profits because you don't want to lose shares. They're shares you want to keep because you get paid on the shares. So don't worry about the value, whether it's up or down. So you don't have to sell out of profits for those, and you don't sell out any of your profits to your mutual funds. You just keep plugging away at those things. Other than that, if a mutual fund, if it's up 50% and you say enough's enough, I can't take it anymore, then just sell out of the position totally and wait to buy back on a dip or buy into another fund. So that was the reason I had this. I'm not a good writer, communicator from a writer. I'm probably not a good communicator from a talking either from that perspective, but I really do a bad job writing. I try to do the best I can. But I asked Yvonne to read my commentary this morning, and she said, well, that sounds pretty scary to me. So that's made me a little nervous. I'm glad we had this conference call where people are dropping off. That's fine. We had 932 people on this call. I haven't had that since before I started recording. A lot of people interested in this. I hope every single one of our partners listens to this call, takes it in the way that it is intended. We'll get back into the swing of things, of getting back into the markets. Start taking some profits when you have them. If they're over 10%, take it. Take a little bit of it. You can let it ride up a little bit if you really feel or have a good feel that it's an upside potential. But, you know, keep taking them along the way until I say stop. I will probably say either stop or now change the strategy a little bit more aggressive. More conservative, I'm sorry, and after the November elections. But let's see what happens in November. And let me tell you something, folks. If you don't get out and vote, if you don't rally voters in every single state, I'm sure I have listeners on this from every state in the country. If you're not rallying the troops and getting out to vote in this general election in midterm election in November, you're out of your mind, because this is your own well-being. This is about the economy. This is going to change things. You think your portfolio looks good today? Wait until you see a year and a half from now, we get an infrastructure bill passed. What do you see what happens, especially in those industrial stocks and some of those others? What do you see what happens to an infrastructure bill? What do you see what happens after the November elections? We get some really good, strong trade deals that start to happen. That may start this week. We may get a NAFTA bill next week. A NAFTA deal next week. We've already got a Europe bill. We're already starting to get some deals made yesterday in Asia. Where do you start seeing that when that starts happening? 95% of business people believe that the U.S. is going to win in the trade wars. Then why are they so afraid? They know we're going to win that. We have the upper hand. We're going to win. And when those wins start happening, the markets are going to have to search real hard for something negative to pull back down. And I'm going to leave you with this one thought for you to hang on to. Markets work like this. You guys feel good. You get pay raises, which we've seen in an enormous way in the compared to the last 10 years. You have more money. You feel good. You see consumer spending, consumer confidence up, on and on it goes. You have more money, you feel good about the economy, business sentiment's up, everybody's happy. Gas prices are going up, nobody's concerned yet. We're spending into the economy. We feel good about our family, our family's future. We continue to buy stuff, we buy stuff. Those companies that we're buying that stuff from say, hey, we're starting to make more money, let's produce more of it. They produce more of it. More of it gets sold because everybody feels good. The more that gets sold, the company produces more. The company now expands. They create more jobs. They hire more workers. They sell more products. And what do you think happens to their stock? Their stock goes up. See, that is a trip that we're going on now. That's a trip back to the future. That's a trip back 70 years. That's the way it's supposed to work. And we are there for the first time in a very, very long time. And when the economy is good, don't worry about your portfolio. Don't worry about your markets. Everything's going to be fine. We're not dependent upon central bankers. We're not dependent upon false positives, skewed numbers. We're not dependent upon any of that. We're depending on companies selling more stuff. And that's what you focus on. That's what's happening. And when that stops, then things are going to stop. The other thing that I forgot in my scenario earlier, we have to use supply and demand with stocks. We have as many publicly traded companies today as we had in 1998. So we have fewer shares for sale and a higher demand than we've ever had in the history of the markets. What do you think that does to prices? People are saying, these are brilliant economists saying, well, you know, the market keeps going. It keeps going up because there aren't any stocks to buy. Demand is high. Prices go up. That's what happens. And until we start seeing a ton of IPOs, we stop seeing mergers and acquisitions, we are going to be in a low supply of stocks for a long time. Nobody that I've talked to factors that in. And that's a huge issue in a good way right now. And that's part of all this too. And that's a good problem to have, I guess. And I said, I just want to bring this up just to say, you know, I said back in November, December last year that we are in a place where we could see valuations getting fixed without a correction. Remember I told you the scenario about what happens with tax cuts and earnings, corporate earnings are going to jump up 2%, 3%, 4%. Some were predicting 5%. And when corporate earnings jump up during earnings season, the value of the company goes up with it. When the value of the company goes up, their stock becomes cheaper because it's calculated on a bigger number. And all of a sudden, valuations of the market become normalized, and we didn't even have a correction. That's exactly what's happened. And when I used to tell people that, they said I was nuts. But that's what's happened. How do we possibly have normal valuations in the market if that didn't happen? That's exactly what has happened. And so with this good earnings season, here we go. It continues to happen. And now we have perfectly normal average valuations of the market where a year ago we were so overvalued that there was no choice but a correction, it seemed. But what I was hoping and saying was a possibility has already happened, and there's still room, more room for that to continue to happen. Okay, well, I sure appreciate it, and I hope that has been comforting. I'll just leave it at that. I hope it's been comforting. I hope that you have some understanding, that you will take heed, that we're all going to be better investors. We all are going to be better stewards of God's money. And more importantly than anything else, we're going to have more money to spend in the kingdom, proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ, making sure our church doors stay open, make sure of good truth ministries that are honoring God stay in business. We're going to have more money to give to kingdom work as God will continue to bless us as we are sold out and convicted to be biblically responsible. I saw an article that biblically responsible investment, they didn't put it that way. How did they put it? Biblical, I don't know how they wrote it, is stronger than it's ever been and continues to grow every single month. I'd like to believe that's my 29 years of educating people. I don't know if it is or not, but I hope it is. But I sure would like to believe that part of that is because of Timothy and others. So sure do appreciate it. I'm glad you were on this call. Tell friends that you know that are our partners to listen tonight. Thank you very much. I sure appreciate all of you. I wouldn't be here without you. God bless. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow on the show. God bless.